Baseball family, welcome to your source for the 2022 MLB playoffs with your hosts, Blackjack Brad and Briggy Blue Eyes. Thank you for joining us live as we watch history in the making. And now, baseball together.
Welcome, baseball family, to this week's episode of the Baseball Together podcast. And because it's the postseason, we are coming at you live on the YouTubes, Twitch, and Facebook. So hop on and join us. I guess if you're here, then you already are, or you're listening the next day. So I guess it doesn't matter. Anyway, let's get down to this. I'm Brad. As always, I've got our co-captain here, Brig. Welcome, Brig. How are you this evening?
Frustrated. How are you, Mr. Brad?
Good. The whole headphone situation's really got you, huh?
And the rain delay. You combine the two, and the rain delay. An upset camper.
Happy camper! the Yankees and Guardians, Game 5, currently in a rain delay. They got to get this game in.
Bro.
Like, big time.
It's 9:30 Eastern. Like, what do they get? Can't wait till tomorrow.
No, they can't. Well, and, you know, this reminds me of... back in 1995, the only reason I remember this is because I watched the Dave Niehaus cassette tape like a bajillion times.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. But I think it was game three or game four between the Yankees and Mariners in the ALDS that went like, I think they played to like 1:30 in the morning because of rain.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so I think it's going to be a similar situation here. Whoever advances, the Astros are going to have a monstrous advantage on Tuesday.
Yeah, they really will,
because you know how it's like, it's not the next day, right? It's the second day of sleep deprivation that really gets you.
That's the one every time.
Yeah, every time. And that's the day they're playing. They have to travel sometime in there. They'll probably skip batting practice to help get a little bit more rest. It's going to mess up everything for game one for whoever the challenger is.
Doesn't matter who. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. So keep an eye on that. Brig will have an update for you as soon as we have a first pitch or any information about a pitch. Brig's got it going live off screen there. So he'll let you know if you're watching live. Welcome on YouTube and Facebook.
Yeah.
Let us know who you are. Let us know that you're here. We want to say hi. We'll give you a shout out. But before we move on to anything real quick, I do want to talk about something in game four from that series, Brig, from the Yankees and Guardians.
Okay.
Just one thing in particular, Josh Naylor. Literally, Brig, I was sitting here watching this game and it was dinner time and I didn't want to have the TV on during dinner because I didn't want to have a distraction. And so I turned the game off and within like a couple seconds, he hit that home run. And for those of you who have been on social media at all today or who were watching the game, know which one I'm talking about.
Right.
He rounded the bases, rocking the baby, which is something he does, I guess. I don't know. I'm not a Josh Naylor fan, so I don't watch him.
Yeah.
But Tristan McKenzie actually explained this a couple weeks ago that he likes to tell the pitcher that he's his daddy. That's why he does that.
Rocking the baby.
Yeah, rocking the baby. And, you know, at first I was like, wow, get ready for one high and tight, Josh Naylor. Because that is wildly disrespectful. But then upon further review, I kind of like that stuff in basketball. Why don't I like it in baseball?
There it is. There it is, Brad.
And there it is. And that's the thing that's funny is that I've been all these years been like, have fun, celebrate and everything. But, and you know, I am still like not at the expense of somebody else, but it's like, why not? These guys are professionals.
Right.
They should be able to handle that part of it too.
They asked Garrett Cole, they're like, he was, you know, he says he's your daddy. He was rocking the baby. And he's like, so it's cute. Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like, I don't care. Which I feel like, to your point, Brad, should inform how the rest of us as fans interact with what happened. You know,
we are way more offended by it than he was.
Way more.
Even if it did bother him and he was just playing it down, like the fact that he can just be like, whatever.
Yeah.
In the press conference rather than being like, we're going to hit him and we're going to hit everybody else in that lineup because we hate their guts now. No, yeah. Like they let their play talk and that's the way it should be. If they don't care, we shouldn't care.
Well, I don't think that's true. I wouldn't take it that far. If they don't care, we shouldn't care, because that's, I mean, I hate to say that's what they pay us for, but that's why they keep us coming around, right? We're the fans. We care about stuff they don't have to care about. That's like our job, man. Our job is to is to sit in the same spot on the couch the whole time to get the mojo working. Our job is to wear our shoes on our heads for them or whatever it is. That's what.
Well, and that's what I'm saying is I'm not saying like don't care about the game. I'm saying don't care about the taunting. Right.
I say as fans, we're the ones who get to care about that. That's our job.
Okay. I see that now.
Okay. But you don't have to agree with me. That's fine.
No, I see what you're saying. And I think it makes sense that we can care about it. So they don't have to.
That's my argument. But baseball family, we want to know what you think. Like if you're watching live, you know, let us know. Are we crazy? Brad and I often overlap, but when we disagree, it is a lot of fun.
You're right. It is a lot of fun. It is a whole lot of fun. Brick, go ahead and tell the baseball family before we move on about an opportunity for them to provide us with some feedback.
Baseball family, we want to hear from you, and not just in the mailbag, and not just on a voicemail, both of which you can do, but we want to hear from you. We have built a survey that will give us better feedback on what it is you like about what we're doing, what it is you hate about what we're doing, and in exchange, because, you know, you deserve something more than just the benefit of hearing from us. We're going to give you a discount code to the shop. It's 20% off. 20% off the shop if you'll answer just a handful of questions for us. And I'm going to put the survey link here in the comment section right meow so that you can jump in there at your leisure and let us know what you think about a couple of things. We got some questions in there and we want to know. So let me put it in here for you right meow. Go ahead. It starts off by asking for your email. I promise we will not use it for anything other than answering these survey questions with better content, different content, whatever it is that might be. And there's an option for you to jump on a phone call with Brad and I, or Brad or I, depending on how the scheduling works out, which is something we are super excited about. So we're going to take that first couple of questions and we're going to build on them. But then we want to talk to you and we want to really see like, how are you feeling? What do you like? What do you hate? What ideas do you have? What do you want more of? What do you want less of? All of that. And we'll make you an offer you can't refuse. So pretty excited. Jump on there. Shoot us a quick email with those questions answered. And get yourself something nice on the shop.
That's right. There you go. Thanks, Brig. Excellent. So the playoffs are obviously pressing forward. And there's always a question. In the playoffs, how are the young guys going to do? Right.
Yeah.
Like there's usually one young guy who comes out of nowhere and it's like, whoa, this guy's a revelation, right? Like Randy Arozarena a few years ago.
Exactly.
Was just unreal in that run that the Rays made to the World Series. And then it carried over one rookie of the year. So it's always interesting to me to see who is going to be able to carry that over. So it's Spencer Strider for the Braves, right?
Yeah.
And he came out and he did well, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Until he kind of didn't.
Right.
Which I guess is how it goes.
Yeah.
So he, I'm looking right now to see where I could find Spencer Strider, exactly how he did. So he pitched in game 3.
Right. I was going to say that was game 3.
In Rays, Phillies and Braves game, or right. Phillies and Braves series, he went 2 1/3, gave up 3 hits, 5 runs. He did strike out 4 in that right. short period of time, and walked 2. So, I don't think he didn't make the appearance he wanted to, but I don't think that's who he is. I don't think he's going to be the postseason choker. I think it's just that he's young.
Yeah.
The next guy, I obviously want to talk about Julio Rodriguez.
Julio! Right?
Julio! Because he came out, he drew a walk the first at bat of the series.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, shoot, here we go. And then he came around and scored the first run of the series, and it was awesome, it was amazing. And he had a pretty good series.
He did.
I wanted him to have a couple more quality at bats, but I wanted everybody to have a couple more quality at bats in game 3, and we'll get there. Yeah. But he did finish the season the series 4-16 with 3 doubles and 3 runs scored. And Brig, a game-saving defensive play in like the 15th inning of game
right.
3.
Yeah,
covered
yeah,
all
yeah.
that ground and made that sliding catch. That would have been it right there. Gave the Mariners 3 more chances to get up there and score a run that they yeah. couldn't capitalize on.
Well, and here's the thing about Julio that I loved out of that whole series was he wasn't clutch necessarily at the plate,
right?
But he was consistent at the plate, right? Yeah. He either got on base or he forced, he forced a walk. He worked the counts deep every time. Mm-hmm. I feel like he really gave Houston a run for their money, and I was just pleased as punch with the whole thing. Like, I really did just love it.
Yeah, well, in his first, so he had those four hits. His first three were all for extra bases. He had two doubles and a triple before he even got a single, which is awesome. So I couldn't have asked for anything more out of Julio. Maybe one more hit there at the end, but that was about it. Jeremy Pena. Go ahead.
No. You go ahead.
Pena, though, that dude was a problem. He is having an outstanding postseason so far. It's only been three games, but. So I have his line right here too, because so he also was 4-for-16, but he hit a home run when it mattered.
Yeah.
He hit the game winning home run in game 3.
Yep.
But he had three other huge at bats, absolutely enormous at bats. He was down to his last strike in game 1, battled through, and he's the reason Yordan Alvarez got up in game 1.
100% accurate. Yep.
And then in game 2, he battled through a couple more at bats with two outs. Got Alvarez up and made the Mariners pay again. Like, it's not always about, especially the guy like Pena, it's not always about hitting a home run, hitting a double, hitting a triple, whatever you need him to do. It's getting through his at bat, battling, and getting to the next guy who is going to cause the damage. And that's what Pena did. He played that role amazingly for the Astros. And he, I feel like, is the reason the Mariners are home right now, and not necessarily Yordan Alvarez, because he went 0-for in game 3.
Yeah,
but man, Jeremy Pena, that guy is going to be a problem for a really, really long time.
Over three games, Jeremy Pena had 17 at bats or 17 plate appearances, 16 at bats. He scored 4 runs on 4 hits. One was a double. One was a home run. He drove in an RBI, obviously. He worked a walk and he struck out 4 times. So that's a collective 250 batting average for a rookie in the postseason
against a top tier pitching staff,
right, including Luis Castillo.
Yes,
right. Yeah. So I just think it's awesome, man. His collective WAR this year is 4.8 in his rookie season.
That's crazy. It's so funny. It's weird to think about that the Astros let Carlos Correa walk because they had an upgrade waiting in the wings.
Isn't that nuts?
It
doesn't even make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Doesn't even make sense. It's
Carlos Correa, perennial all-star.
Yeah.
MVP candidate. And they're just like, you're fine. We don't want to pay you that much to keep you around, man, because we've got somebody who's going to be better for us this year than what you've been the last three. So it's fine.
So just as a frame of reference, Carlos Correa's season WAR was 5.4. So only a half a bump up from what their rookie is getting of them. In arbitration, lots of club protection there.
Oh, so much club control there.
It's awesome for the Houston Astros. Like,
and I hate every bit of
him
it.
Well, I hate it too. But they're treating him well. He's getting the at bats. He's getting time in the field. He's obviously getting the respect from his teammates and the staff. So you got to know Dusty Baker loves everything about this from a manager's perspective. But the front office jumping up and down at how this is panning out.
Has to be. Yep. Yeah. So the next guy, Stephen Kwan. Let's talk about Stephen Kwan a little bit. This is a guy.
This guy's a problem.
He is a problem. I don't have his line on me right now, but
I got it.
Go ahead. Tell us about Stephen Kwan. So this is a series you've been watching more closely than I have.
Right. So let me tell you about this ALDS. He's had over 4 games, 17 at-bats. He is currently batting. Oh, no. He's batting .412 across the 4 games.
Hold on, Brig. We have an update thanks to Jason.
Yeah.
Yankees versus Guardians tomorrow at 4:07 p.m.
You're kidding me.
That's huge.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
that is
no.
bad. That's bad.
Well, you might as well give this whole thing to Houston.
At least game 1.
Yeah. Well, and they're that good, though.
They are.
Like, let's be honest.
We'll get there.
And we'll talk about that.
That's a big deal. Like, that, Wow. Real quick, I want to take a quick sidebar on this because that's not good for the playoffs. That's not good for baseball. Baseball had Monday night, an elimination game. Granted, it's up against Monday Night Football. That's not ideal. But at the same time, though, you've got an elimination game up against a bad Monday Night Football game.
Right.
Yeah, and you can't make it happen because of rain.
So Brad turned me on to this, but David Samson's podcast this morning, It's Nothing Personal, which is a great show, by the way. And I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, so I really appreciate Samson's insight and his perspective. That's why we had him on the show. But he gets on and says, how weird is it, how dumb is it that we have a sport where the weather is as significant an impact player as anybody on the field, as any of the umpiring crew, right? Like, you can't guarantee, he says, that your most important games of the season even happen according to schedule.
Yeah.
He's so right. I don't know why I never even thought about it in quite those terms, but it blew my mind.
That's why I feel like any new stadium that's built has to have a retractable roof. And you don't have to do the fully enclosed. Like, they have a fully enclosed, I believe, in Miami. I know it's fully enclosed in Houston, enclosed. Arlington. Well, yeah, but that's just a dome.
Because it's a dome.
I mean, that's just...
You say it's a dumb or a dome?
They're interchangeable, but here in Phoenix, it's fully enclosed. But Seattle has done it right, I feel like, with the retractable roof. It's basically an umbrella. You still have the wind can come through and affect things like that, and the fans still feel like they're outdoors. You're just not getting wet.
It's perfect.
It's the perfect solution, and that's the way it should be everywhere. Do it that way in, like, next time the White Sox get a new stadium, the Tigers get a new stadium. Anytime anybody gets a new stadium in a place where it's not overly hot, like Texas, Arizona, or Florida, just do the umbrella solution, and you can play games 12 months out of the year almost.
Almost. Yeah.
And it would be fantastic.
There's going to be some holdouts that'll never do it, and we'll talk about that later. We've got some off-season comments or content built out about stadiums, so we'll get there. But let's see. Jason commented again. Phils and the Rays played game 5 of the 08 World Series over the course of 2 days because of rain. Yeah, that's a true story. That's true. I wasn't watching.
Terrible way to play postseason baseball, though. It's a terrible way to play postseason baseball, though. You shouldn't have to do it over 2 days.
No, I agree. So, okay, back to Stephen Kwan. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay, 4 games. He's batting .412 is his average. His OBP is .444, slugging .647. His OPS is 1.092. He has had 11 total bases in the course of 4 games, and he's a rookie. So that puts his collective WAR at 5.5 on the season.
So I feel if it wasn't for Adley Rutschman, I feel like Stephen Kwan would be your runner-up for the Rookie of the Year this year.
Yeah.
Like, if Julio Rodriguez hadn't gone and set records and had a Mike Trout-like rookie season, he probably wouldn't have gotten it, and it would be Stephen Kwan who's up there with him. I think he'll finish number 3. Because he had a great season.
Totally. Not even
the only reason it was quiet is because he played for Cleveland and Julio was so loud.
Yes. So Stephen Kwan's just his batting. He's 24 years old, by the way. 24. Jeremy Pena's 26.
Is he? I have no idea.
For reference sake, he's 26. Stephen Kwan's 24 years old. He played 147 games for Cleveland this year. And his collective average, batting average, .298, OBP .373, slugging .400. His OPS is .772 over the season. It's insane.
It's a good year. And he's having a good postseason too.
Right.
So we'll see what happens tomorrow with him and the Guardians and the Yankees. Let's talk a little bit of free agency.
Okay.
Just a little bit. I don't want to get too deep into this right now because we're going to have a more in-depth conversation about this when the postseason's over, when the playoffs and World Series are over. Yeah. But we do have a couple of things here. First, Carlos Correa, like we talked about before, we predicted that he was going to opt out of his contract with the whole Dior comment that he made, right? So he's going to opt out. He'll be a free agent. He's going to test the market.
Yeah.
But then we got Drew Hutchinson. Tigers' Drew Hutchinson was DFA'd. Wilson Contreras is going to be one of the biggest targets this offseason, because there are a lot, because he's still got a lot of ball in him, and there are a lot of teams that need a catcher. And you know what? I was pushing really hard for Wilson Contreras in Seattle this year, earlier this year.
Yeah.
I don't think we need him. I don't think the Mariners need him.
No.
I just hope he doesn't go to another AL West team. I don't know of anybody that can afford him necessarily or would go after him, but that's my hope with him. Here's another hot name. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Hey. Well, we'll talk about this in our prediction episode, but I just had a thought that I would love to see him land in Anaheim.
They do have an opening for a catcher. I just don't know if they would be willing to pay him. They got that for sale sign outside.
But it could be fun.
It could be fun. Yeah.
I'm just thinking about the possibilities. Anyway.
Wilson Contreras bat number 4 behind Ohtani.
Behind Ohtani.
Yeah. Here's another big one. Edwin Diaz. That's a huge one. He is hot. He's so hot right now. He is Hansel. He is so hot.
Yep.
And this is the thing, is that when the Mariners traded him, he was like, you know how closers kind of have like a really small window where they're elite and dominant?
Yeah.
I was okay with the trade because I was like, okay, he's like on the backside of that window. And last year he wasn't great. But man, this year he's back to form, and I think he's going to get paid next year. I don't know whether he's going to hit that backside of the window and tail off wherever he goes, but I think he's going to get paid this offseason, because there are a lot of teams will pay that dude a lot of money to come in and do what he did for the Mets this year.
Yeah. But I don't want to see an Aroldis Chapman situation. And I think it's entirely possible with Edwin Diaz that he gives whoever he goes to 1 to 2 years that are really, really good. And then we're wondering why he's here for the rest of the
time. Honestly, I think that's what's going to happen. That's what I'm saying. He's on the tail end of that closer window. And I hope it doesn't happen, because that it's awful to see. I think it's going to, the way that they can remedy that is moving him into the role of a setup man.
Yep.
Is once he starts blowing saves, be like, okay, you're not our closer anymore. We got this guy who can close. Let's move you to our setup man role. Take you out of such a high leverage situation.
100%.
But either way, he's going to get paid. Xander Bogaerts is going to get paid.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody's going to give him a lot of money. Carlos Rodon.
I don't know about that one, man.
I don't know either. I think he'll be a hot commodity because of what he's done, but I don't think he's going to get what he could have gotten before this
year. Yeah.
Dansby Swanson is he'll be highly sought after. I think that a lot of teams, like, their top targets will be Carlos Correa, Xander Bogaerts, and then Dansby Swanson will be their bargain version of those two guys.
Well, he's what about Trey Turner?
Oh yeah, Trey Turner's farther down the line, so it'll be those three, and then
exactly.
Dansby Swanson's going to be the more affordable version of those guys, right?
Like the Trevor Story, right? Where it's like, all right,
yeah,
I agree. So,
and then Justin Verlander's going to be free agent. Honestly, I see him just going back to Houston and playing out a couple more years, and that'll be it.
Yep.
Jacob DeGrom has made it sound like he's not going to be going back to the Mets. Aaron Judge is the big fish on the market this year. That's going to be crazy to follow. Clayton Kershaw says he's considering playing one more year. I could see him going back to the Dodgers and finishing it out. Josh Bell will be interesting to watch.
Yeah.
Especially
if the Padres win it all.
Yeah.
That will change everything and the role, for Josh
and
Bell.
I think it will all depend on the role he has in their playoff run the rest of the way. I think that's what's going to come down to. Mike Clevinger, exact same thing.
Same.
Adam Frazier for the Mariners. The market for him this year is not going to be what it was last year, because he's so up and down. The thing, I think I said this, I can't remember if I said that here or on the Seattle Baseball Together podcast. I will take Adam Frazier's lows if it means I get his highs.
Interesting.
Because when that dude's on, all he does is get on base.
Yeah,
he is
a
hit machine when he's on, and it lasts for weeks at a time. His lows will last for a couple weeks at a time, and he won't do anything at all, and he'll even commit a couple errors in the field. But when that dude is on, he is absolutely an all-star. Mitch Haniger, fascinating situation in Seattle. I would not be surprised if they let him walk, because he's going to want a bunch of money, and somebody else is going to pay him. I think what it is they'll offer him money, but it will be a discounted rate compared to what he'll get somewhere else. I don't think he'll be in Seattle next year.
Which is too bad.
It is too bad, because he's the OG at this point. But at the same time, you kind of got to move on, right? Sometimes.
Yeah.
Andrew Haney, Rafael Montero, Noah Syndergaard.
Nothing.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot there for him. And then Jameson.
He'll get picked up by like Diamondbacks or something. We'll pick up Syndergaard. Right.
I'll pay to go to those games.
That's what I mean. But he's going to get picked up by a team like Arizona that like, you know, they need somebody. They got a placeholder guy.
Yeah.
And he's good enough. He brings a lot of wisdom and experience and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, like, they're not going to worry about him being the best guy on the team. They're just going to fill out a roster and it'll be good.
Right. Yep. Yep. Okay. Before we go into our break, we're going to wrap up. Let's do this, Brig. Let's go ahead and take a break.
Okay.
And we will come back. We'll wrap up the American League Division Series, the ALDS and the NLDS.
Right.
And then we'll take another break, and then we'll get into the Championship Series. So we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back, and we'll get into those.
No matter which ballpark you're at, you want to rep your team. Now you can with 9+ Us. Welcome to the Big City Series. With every design available in your team's colors, you can fit in with the home crowd or stand out on the road. Either way, we have the colors you crave. Shop the Big City Series and find designs that rep your favorite baseball podcast, cheer from the cheap seats, and much more. Shop the Big City Series only at 9plusus.com.
Welcome back, baseball family. We are very excited to discuss the division series because they were bananas. They were as bananas as you can find in Savannah. Like, legitimately, nobody saw these things coming. We had none of the favorites advanced.
Only one favorite has advanced.
Well, so Houston, that's true. I forget Houston. I don't consider them a favorite because I don't favorite Houston, but... That's a cognitive dissonance problem, ladies and gentlemen. That has nothing to do with what's actually happening in the world. Basically, let's talk first about the NLDS, okay? The Phillies and Braves. The Phillies defeated the Braves in a 3-1 in four games of a 5-game series. I can words right now, Brad.
You got it. You'll get there. Not worried.
Bryce Harper went 8-for, so these are notable notes. Notable notes. Bryce Harper, 8-for-16, 2 home runs, a double, 5 RBIs, thank you, 4 runs, but only 2 strikeouts. This is the Bryce Harper we heard about when he was 16 and was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. This is the Bryce Harper that Washington groomed and wanted desperately, and this is the Bryce Harper that the Phillies paid for.
I feel like it's October Bryce Harper, honestly.
He's here, man.
That dude shows up.
Yeah.
He really does. And people are going to rail on him for his performance in Washington, but he's not the reason the Nats were eliminated when he was there.
Nope.
That dude shows up for the postseason, and this is the guy you get. He's unreal.
It's unreal. So congratulations to Brother Harper. We hope he does very, very well continuing forward. But let's talk about Nick Castellanos and JT Realmuto, because these are the best storylines. These are the guys that have been sitting around waiting to go to the postseason in a Philly uniform for way too long. It's been a long time coming for all the fans, and because they love, especially Realmuto. Like, the fans love JT so much. And so Nick Castellanos goes 5-for-16, 5 RBIs, a double, and only 2 strikeouts. Fabulous. And JT goes 5-for-18 with a home run, which is an inside the park home run. And that is the first ever by a catcher in the postseason.
It's amazing.
Did you know he has 3 inside the parkers in his career?
I didn't know that. I knew that he could move for a catcher, right?
He's got right.
He runs well for a catcher is what they used to say about Pudge. And JT Realmuto definitely runs well for a catcher. He was moving, man, to get around those bases. It was awesome. He got a really fortuitous bounce off that. I guess it depends on what side you're coming on. Could be unfortunate if you're a Braves fan. And it ricocheted back toward right field. And, man, he was cooking all the way around. It wasn't even close. And this is one thing that I've noticed a lot in the postseason with things that have gone on, like weird bounces like that.
Yeah.
It feels like outfielders are not moving toward one another to help each other out in case something like that happens.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
That like the right fielder should have been there to catch the, to play the carom off the wall. If that happened, like you can't assume your guy's going to make the catch. And I saw a couple, in the Seattle and Houston series. I can't think exactly what they were off the top of head. I just remember that happening and being like, there should have been somebody there within 15 feet to get that ball.
Well, right? It's the same thing with Josh Donaldson coming from third base. What, almost like 75 feet into left field to dive and miss the ball that Hicks was loafing toward.
That's Hicks's ball.
Every day.
Absolutely Hicks's ball.
All day long. But to your point, it's the same thing. It's like not a lot of backup, not a lot of covering down, and it's really unfortunate. The thing about that inside the Parker, though, if I remember right, and Jason's watching, so he can tell me if this is true, but if I remember right, the ball, the throw hit the mound and bounced on its way. Oh, it
took like a high hop. Yeah.
It took a little bit of a hop because it wasn't quite on target. It had the right trajectory, but it dove a little bit, hit the mound, bounced up, and then made it to the catcher. And that threw it off just enough to make it possible for the inside the Parker.
I think he would have been safe anyway, if I remember watching that right.
You think so?
I think he would have been. I don't know that bounce necessarily changed it enough. Like, it certainly made it so it wasn't as close as it could have been, obviously, right?
Yeah.
But well, I think he would have gotten in there before the tag was placed on him anyway.
Hmm.
But anyway, no, it certainly helps though. And that's, it I love a lot. When stuff like that happens.
Me too.
Like a few years ago, Wilson Contreras set a bat out in front of home plate and the throw hit it.
Yeah.
And avoided a play at the plate.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. It's awesome.
It is awesome.
Like, it sucks when it happens to your team, but it's just one of the oddities of baseball. But let's talk about Gene Segura for just a minute too. This is his first ever postseason, first career postseason. This guy deserves it more than most guys, I feel like, in the league. Gene, totally. Mean Gene, the hitting machine, Segura. He went 5 for 18, 2 doubles and 3 runs. I could not be happier to see this guy succeed in the postseason. It was awesome.
I figured you'd feel that way. He's in his 10th season.
Yeah, like I loved Gene Segura when he was in Seattle.
Yeah.
He was part of the J.P. Crawford trade, and I was really bummed to see him go. But J.P. Crawford has been great in Seattle, and I'm glad to see that Gene Segura is still doing well in Philadelphia.
Well, and let's be honest, this is age 32 season. So there's potentially not a lot of time left for him to have these experiences.
The thing for him, though, is I feel like his game ages well because he's not a speed guy.
That's true.
He's a contact guy.
For sure.
Right? And he's a second baseman, so he doesn't need a whole lot of range. So I think he can continue to play for a few more years as long as that bat continues to make contact, because that's what he does. He makes contact and drives the ball. So I think he's got a few more good years in him.
Let's shift gears across the country to the Padres and Dodgers series, which was unbelievable.
Seriously.
Again, the Dodgers lost 3-1 in this series. The Padres came through somehow and beat them 3-1. And I say somehow, I mean, it makes sense if you're watching the games, because they just got beat. Like it was just a simple. So, and that's the thing, is that we talked about the Dodgers who play clinical baseball, right? It's technically accurate. It's technically sound. And somehow all of the mojo and all of the young fire and energy that Slam Diego brought to the table really did just beat him. It's astonishing. Yeah. Jake Cronenworth, 7 for 16 with 5 RBIs and a home run. Manny Machado went 5 for 14 with a double, a home run, 2 RBIs, and 3 walks.
It's October Manny.
Manny is a revelation every single time we watch him play at this point.
It's like funny. Like I'm just gonna beat this horse to death, Brig, and continue to beat it after it's dead. That Manny Machado continues to be overlooked as a player, especially in October. Because was it 2019? He was the only one who showed up to the World Series for the Dodgers.
The only one.
I think him and Chris Taylor, maybe. But Manny Machado was the only one. Instead, people are killing him for not running out of ground ball to shortstop. It's like, he's producing everywhere else. Give the guy a break on a routine ground ball.
Yeah, so he's been great. Let me just pull up his playoff performances right now. So this season, out of 4 games, 14 ABs. He's hitting 357, 471, 643. His OPS is 1.113. He's had 9 total bases to his name and 2 home runs on top of that, which we've already mentioned. But, I mean, like, his season career, his WAR this season is 6.8. Do you know what his career WAR is, Brad? Just guess.
I honestly have no idea. He's probably up in the 20s, maybe low 30s.
52.
Holy cow.
His career WAR is 52. Anyway, the end. Manny Machado is the real deal.
Yes.
And his attitude used to suck, but it doesn't anymore. It's awesome now.
He's matured. He's matured a ton since he's gone to the West Coast, and it's been big time. It's been huge for him and the Padres. And the Dodgers when he was there, like I said, it's a big deal. But anyway, speaking of the Dodgers, they struggled big time this series. They got the one win, but other than that, they only hit 4 home runs in the 4 games. Trey Turner hit 2 of them.
Right.
Freddie Freeman and Max Muncy each hit 1. So there's your 4 right there.
Yeah.
Justin Turner, who you would expect to show out for a series like this, was 2-for-13. Chris Taylor, your October guy in LA, was 0-for-7. They pay him to play in October.
That's right.
He's typically a utility and situational guy for the Dodgers, but they pay him to show up in October, and he didn't. And then Mookie Betts, speaking of paying somebody, was 2-for-14. The 3 of them combined for 1 RBI. It was only Mookie Betts who got an RBI.
I'm just going to say this now. Win games
playing like that.
You got to get rid of Justin Turner if you're the LA front office.
I honestly don't think he's going to be there a whole lot longer. I'm going to check right now to see when his contract is up, because he's old. He's 37. Old.
Yeah. You got to
Which shocks me, because I don't feel like he's that old.
He hides it behind all the
behind the beard,
facial hair.
It works for you. That's why I have one.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah.
So he is going to be a free agent after next season. Actually, there's a team option with $2 million buyout. I don't think he's coming back.
He's not coming back. If there's a team option, he's not coming back.
No.
Nope.
I think that the Dodgers need to tear it down, to be honest.
The whole thing. Yes. And they're not alone. He says he's 37 and that hurts. Yeah, thanks, Jason.
I'm getting there. I'm 36.
But, y'all are old. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I think it's time to tear down the Dodgers, though. You've got to start thinking for longer term than this, because if it didn't happen with this team, it's not going to happen.
Not in the last, what, 6 seasons?
Well, and they have what's referred to what everybody, what people call the Mickey Mouse World Series. You know, the only one they've won in all these years they've been dominant was in 2020.
Yeah.
And granted, everybody's playing in the same circumstances.
Oh, I agree.
But still, it makes a difference. And the fact that they have not been able to close the deal is a huge problem. And I think it's Dave Roberts. I think it's, gosh, I don't know. I don't know which of those guys you trade off, but I think you sell off Cody Bellinger for parts. I think you you might need to deal Mookie Betts. Keep Freddie Freeman as your centerpiece, but I don't know. You got to blow it up, man.
Yeah. So
it's not going to get any better.
Clayton Kershaw didn't pitch once this postseason.
Wow. That's crazy.
Is it? Hold on. I'm looking. Wins, losses? Nope. He didn't pitch one time this postseason. Oh, wait. Hold on. One game. Hold on. This thing.
He pitched 5 innings. He pitched 5 innings, gave up 6 hits, 3 runs, 6 strikeouts.
With a 5.40 ERA. There it is. Okay. I was reading the wrong line. Yeah. That's bad.
Yeah. But still, you got to have better from him than that. But
you have to.
Anyway. All right, should we shift gears over to the American League?
Yeah, let's talk about the Astros and Mariners, Brad's very favorite topic. He's in mourning, for those of you watching. He's wearing black on black
today. I never go black on black, but I'm black on black today because I'm mourning.
I don't blame
you. The Astros won this one 3-0. They swept the series. But I was very encouraged by the whole thing, to be honest with you, because for an incredibly young team, they gave the Astros everything they had.
And gave them a run for their money.
Yeah.
That was the best part, is that they didn't just throw everything they had in there and everybody was like, that's cute. It was, right. Oh, no. Holy wow.
Brig, two bounces, and that series was 2-1 after Sunday's game or Saturday's game.
100%.
That's, I keep thinking Sunday because they essentially played four games in that series.
They totally did.
Because yeah, game three went 18 innings.
So game three went 18 innings. It's the longest scoreless game in postseason history. And it is now tied in if I remember right, it's a four-way tie for the longest game in postseason history, no matter what. It was 6.5 hours.
Yeah, it was.
Of baseball.
Yeah.
Yep. And it was awesome. Should we talk about superstitions for a minute or should we not?
Let's get into superstitions, Brig. Let's get into it. Okay. Because first off, I owe Jewel an apology because last week I said I wasn't going to rail on him. Then I railed on him for not holding the position. I did not hold the position in game one. I figured, you know what? This game's as good as over. I'm going to go downstairs. I'm going to get some popcorn. So I went downstairs and got some popcorn. And then the Astros got two guys on. I put the popcorn back, ran back upstairs to my spot. And by that point, it was too late. And Yordan Alvarez hit an upper decker.
Yep. Well, I got on the phone with Brad and I said, Brad, for those of you following us on Instagram, see the conversation live because Brad kept his language in check, which is I was really appreciative of. So I didn't have to edit anything. And I don't know if you knew. Did you know I was posting live as we were chatting?
I had no idea. I had so many other things on my mind.
That's
break.
What I thought.
I was 15 innings into a scoreless game, game.
I was giggling my little butt off. So I texted Brad. I said, Brad, I have been watching the GameCast on my phone the whole time and things are going well enough. Like, but we need to shake it up. Can I break the position? Right. Cause hold the position was like when right. Brad was doing this.
Yeah. I tried everything, Brick. I tried everything. I went here. I went surrender Cobra. I put a pillow on my head. I probably should have grabbed a shoe. I had an ottoman right there with shoes and I should have grabbed a shoe and put it on my head. I tried everything. And then finally I was like, yeah, maybe we should break the position. I sat on the floor and then like, three batters later, Jeremy Pena hits a home run.
I said, no, Brad, don't do it. I told him that I carry half of the mojo points because I'm not technically a Mariners fan. So it would be okay for me to break the mold. You stay where you're at. But he blew it. And then I blew it. So I figure like we blew it.
That's the thing is I thought that maybe it was like we've been in a standstill for this long. Maybe I need because I'll tell you what, Brig. I sat on the other side of the couch in the first inning, and the Astros got two guys on. Immediately, I moved to the other end of the couch, yeah. And they got out of it. Like, okay, that's fine. And
that's
then
the way it goes.
And then we got to like the 10th inning. And I was like, I need something, so I went and grabbed my popcorn, and I was not eating it during the inning. I was eating it between innings. And then I can't remember what inning it was, but at one point they got a couple guys on. As I was sitting there eating, I put it down. I didn't touch till the game was over. I was too scared. Afraid. Too I was scared afeared, as you say.
Afeared. I was afeared.
Yeah, I was afeared.
So Seattle, let's see. I'm going to move to the postseason really quick because Seattle, I thought they did terrific. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I was really happy. They had the Astros up against the wall a couple times, and it was awesome. Like the Mariners, like the Astros only led for like four innings.
Total. Yeah.
Out of 27 innings played.
Yeah. Jason's telling me you're not allowed to eat popcorn ever again.
Oh, not during baseball season. No, I'm done with popcorn during baseball. At least while the Mariners are playing. No more.
So Yordan Alvarez went 4-for-15, 2 homers, 7 RBIs, and 3 runs total.
Both home runs were go-ahead homers.
And they were clutch, man. Exactly. So Jose Altuve, my favorite statistic here of the day, the whole day. Yeah. Jose Altuve went 0-for-16 with 6 strikeouts and 1 walk. Loved it.
That I feel like that was a significant part of the success the Mariners had against them was keeping Altuve off the base paths. Is that being able to get that out going toward Jeremy Pena, who was just clutch as clutch can be.
Right.
But man, yeah, but if that you don't was, have it was
production in front of him. it's it stings a little less. Yeah.
Well, and it's the thing too is like you get late in the game with Altuve and you never know what's going to happen because he has hit a walk-off home run to send them to the World Series. He is clutch, but the fact that he didn't do anything in this series at all, no matter when it was, that to me was an enormous win. Absolutely. Yeah. Enormous, and showed the guts that this pitching staff has. Guys who have struggled periodically here and there the last week or two, right? Yeah. They came in and they faced him straight up. They struck him out.
They got that's what I think is amazing is that it wasn't that he was off. It was that the pitching seemed like it was on. Like he had his moments where he shouldn't have chased, and he had his moments where, you know, you're like, all right, where's your head? But most of the time he just got beat.
Well, because there were a couple long strikes. He had a couple long strikes. I was like, oh shoot! If he straightens that out, this game is in trouble.
Yeah.
But
so I thought that was a really impressive thing, and we'll see if he can make an adjustment for the LCS because it's entirely possible. And I don't think it matters who they face, whether it's Cleveland or New York. I think he's going to have made an adjustment and is going to be problematic in the ALCS.
I think so too.
Because if you get shown up by a Mariners team like this young, that everybody's calling upstarts, et cetera, like you don't want to be the veteran legendary, you know, dude like Altuve is and carry on whatever you've been carrying with you. So
right.
I'm really excited to see what adjustments he makes from, from like a baseball fan perspective, but I hope he continues as like a human. Yeah, I hope he continues to struggle. Yeah. Let's talk about Peña, because we talked about him a little bit, but he went 4-for-16 with a home run. It's the game winner in game three, and then he battled three times to set up Alvarez for these game-changing RBIs, like you said. And obviously it didn't come to fruition because Altuve couldn't put it together, but Alvarez could.
Yeah,
it's a big deal. Yuli Gurriel.
It was a big deal.
Yeah, Yuli Gurriel goes 6-for-15. Duh. And
you expect that. Like every time he got up there and like hit a home run or hit a double, I was like, of course he did. Like I get more stressed out when that guy is like my new Jim Thome. Because
right?
I feel like Jim Thome, every time he got up, especially in October, it's like this, he's getting on. It's just a matter of how he does it. And I feel like it's the same thing with Gurriel. Like once October rolls around, you know he's getting on.
Didn't Thome hit 6 home runs in the postseason at one point in one postseason run one time?
Probably. Yeah, it was probably like 98
or 95. Yeah, something like that.
I feel like he was hitting dingers every time he was up against the Mariners. Like, just driving me nuts.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let's move over to the Seattle lineup really quick. A couple of notables. Julio Rodriguez, 4-for-16 as well. 3 doubles and 3 runs. Check this out. Let me just call back to this, okay? Peña, 4-for-16. Rodriguez, 4-for-16. And Alvarez, 4-for-15. Two of those guys are rookies.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. But I think it also shows the quality of the pitching. Like we talked about, for sure. Alvarez, 4-for-15. Altuve, 0-for-16. Peña, hitting 250 in this series was really good because nobody was hitting. Nobody was hitting at all.
So let's talk about the pitching, at least on the side, because Verlander got mowed over.
He did.
Like he brought nothing to the table. Nothing.
No, and it's like I said, I think I brought this up on Thursday that the Mariners went deep on him, got deep counts on him, and got to him early. And it was it was looking like the Mariners were gonna coast to a game one win.
Well, and they almost did, honestly. They should have had that in the bag.
Yeah, but he went 4 innings, 10 hits, 6 runs, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts was all.
Woof. That's real. That's like rookie business right there. That's real bad.
It is. And the thing is like we've talked about, he gets worse as he goes deeper into the playoffs. And I'm curious what he's going to do in the next series.
Well, and deeper into even one game at a time, right? The deeper he gets, even the deeper he gets into counts. Like if you can push him to an 8 or 9 or 10 pitch at bat, the dude's going to struggle. Yeah. And then I feel like he carries that forward and that momentum just snowballs on him somehow.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And I don't think it's a mental thing. I think it's just, I think it might be an age thing and just seeing his stuff kind of thing, because his success comes from getting guys to get themselves out. He pounds the zone and he says,
yeah,
you're, you're either going to swing and miss, you're either going to foul it off, get yourself to two strikes, then you're going to swing and miss, or you're going to ground out because you're not going to make solid contact. They're making solid contact against him, and when that happens, it's ugly for him. But can we talk Luis Castillo for a minute?
We have to. I was going to say that.
Seven innings pitched, five hits allowed, three earned runs. He gave up a couple home runs, which was what the Astros do, right? They don't get on base. They hit home runs instead, which was the problem in the end. And then he struck out seven in seven innings. George Kirby, seven innings pitched, rookie, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No earned runs, five strikeouts, no walks.
What?
Amazing.
The fact that he's a rookie up against arguably the most terrifying team in baseball is fabulous.
Yep. One of the most loaded offenses in baseball.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Let's talk for a minute about the ALDS. I made a comment. In fact, I'll just find it and pull it up really quick.
Okay. While you find that, we have a comment that I want to address. This is from Derpy Gaming. It'll be the Yankees, unfortunately, against the Astros. As a Cleveland fan, baseball gods just hate us. I feel that on such a high level because I feel like the baseball gods hate the Mariners so bad so often. Sorry, Brig, before you get in there, I wanted to talk about this real quick. Because as we were going through game three, the umpiring behind home plate just felt bad. Like, not good.
Okay. Yeah.
And here is the confirmation of it. Because, so first off, I want to show this. In the middle, you've got the runs for Houston, 0.68. But it's not just like 0.68 toward Houston. The home plate umpire was taking runs off the board for both teams.
Right.
But it happened to be for Seattle more based on the situations and everything. Yeah. But this is the thing that really drives me nuts, Brig. Look at this. On the left side of the plate, there's like five strikes called in that same spot, which is like, okay, like that's consistently called in that same spot. You saw it all game. But one, that's not necessarily a hittable pitch.
No, right.
And two, there is a ball called on the plate.
Yeah, in the zone.
That same spot. And then there's a strike called low just below that. Like, that is so horribly inconsistent. How do you do that? And then on the other side of the plate, on the right-handed batter's box side, you've got two balls called in the zone and four strikes called outside the zone in that same spot. And then you go up, there's a ball called at the top of the zone. Like, that's fine. I understand calling a ball at the top of the zone. That can be hard to tell sometimes. But there's a strike called three baseball widths above the zone.
Yes.
It was insane. Like, that's why this game went scoreless for 17 and a half innings, was because the home plate umpire was not consistent, was taking the bat out of the guy's hands because you don't know what it's going to be. I haven't looked, but I'm curious how many backwards Ks there were in that game because guys just didn't know. They didn't know. Like, they're like, okay, that's a ball. No, that's a strike. Okay. Well, and then you've got a close. It was just absolutely insane. I was just furious the entire game. Like, at one point I was keeping track of where the balls and strikes were being called at the bottom of the zone several times. It's like, well, that was a ball last inning. How is that a strike now? Well, that was a strike last inning. How is that a ball now? It was it was driving me absolutely up the wall. And this is why, Brig, I'm so strongly in favor of robot umpires, because I know it's going to look weird. You're going to have the catcher setting up outside and there's going to be a ball on the inside corner of the plate that you're going to be like, that's a ball. Well, no, it crossed the plate. It doesn't matter where the catcher set up. It's still a strike.
Yeah.
Right. Like, absolutely insane.
I agree. And then, plus framing and everything like that.
Yeah. Too. And there was a pitch. It should have been 0-2 on, I can't remember who it was exactly, but I remember it should have been 0-2 because it was very clearly in the zone. I think it might've been this one towards the bottom of the zone down in the lower left-hand corner of the box.
Yeah.
Cal Raleigh, who, by the way, was playing with a broken thumb, just couldn't squeeze it, right? And the umpire
was astonishing
because he missed it.
And we texted him, we messaged him on Instagram. He still didn't get back to us. Like, I'm like, you have breaks in mid-game, homie. Come on. Anyway, a couple of comments have come in from Derpy Gaming. I want to highlight these really quick. He says that this is how it's been for the Cleveland series all the way around. It's been too inconsistent. Favorable calls going both ways. We have an umpire scorecard right here, man. How do you pull that, man? You pull that off? There we go. Oh, we did it at the same time. All right. So Derpy Gaming, here's what we've seen. This is game one of the ALDS Cleveland.
That's a terribly established strike zone, by the way.
It's look at it. It looks like a tooth. Looks like a molar.
It does right? Look like a molar.
Like this is absurd. And strikes are low. I guarantee those strikes down in, under the zone, where some of those were against Aaron Judge, because he gets those calls, strikes below the zone by two or three baseballs all the time. Now, I know I'm a Yankees fan, but it's still ridiculous because this gave Cleveland a half a run favorable. But look at the overall consistency is still only 93%. League average is 94%. That's terrible. Brad wants it up in the 97-98 range, which I think is a fair. But the called strike accuracy is 84% in this game, obviously, when Jordan Baker was behind the plate. So Derpy Gaming, just an idea that you're exactly right. Inconsistent all over the place, and it's ridiculous. You also got another comment here from Derpy Gaming. He says that so the Mariners aren't as deep in the bullpen. And that's been the difference maker. He's talking about specifically
the bullpen,
correlating the bullpens between Seattle and Cleveland. So that's the difference maker against the Astros, how deep the bullpen is. So do you think that's the case? Is it a matter of how deep the bullpen is to beat the Astros?
Honestly, with the Astros, because they have so much power, they go deep when they have to. That's the difference. It's literally one pitch. That's all it is. Yeah. The Mariners have a top five bullpen. I know the Guardians have a great bullpen too. I don't know if they're top five, whatever, but it doesn't matter who you have on the mound. If they don't even have to make a mistake. Like one of Alvarez's home runs was a ball out of the zone.
Yeah. And he reached out and grabbed it. He almost the one that he slapped at it.
Boxes.
Yeah.
Because he's so big and so strong. He doesn't have to make, he can miss it and it's going to go out.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. And Peña is such a great hitter. He doesn't have to hit strikes either. So, you know, that. Right. I don't know. Like, that's the hard thing is, like, you got to keep him in the yard. If you can keep him in the yard, you're going to win. And that was the Mariners' Achilles heel this year. And if the Guardians can, they might stand a chance, but it just comes down to timely home runs.
Well, and I think the biggest thing is, so if we talk about the Yankees playing them, the bullpen's a mash unit right now. It's a total issue. Mm-hmm. And those guys aren't throwing ground balls, right? It's all or nothing, do or die with the Yankees bullpen right now. So, really interested to see. And that's why Stephen Kwan has been so successful against the Yankees. And that's why Jose Ramirez has been so successful against the Yankees. Obviously, they play a little bit of a different style. I feel like Kwan, they're the same because Kwan is a production hitter. He's a contact guy. And so is Jose, which is awesome. Okay. I got to move on because I got to issue an apology.
Go ahead. And then we'll take a break and we'll talk.
Yeah.
Championship series.
So going into Gerrit Cole's start in Cleveland, there was a question on some Yankees groups that I was part of. I am still. I didn't get banned, Jason. I know you're wondering. that's a callback. Anyway, they asked what the fans think Gerrit Cole's performance will look like starting in Cleveland, and I got it so wrong. Here's what I said, and then I'll issue my formal apology. So I said he'll struggle in the first inning. Then he's going to throw 3 1/3 solid before being left in too long. Then his dismantling will be complete, and the game will come down to how effective the offense is prior to his departure, is what I said. And I am going to formally apologize by also explaining to you how Gerrit Cole did over six innings or seven innings with hold on, I'm pulling it up right now. He went October 16th, Gerrit Cole pitched seven innings. He only gave up six hits, two earned runs, one home run, which happens every time. Gerrit Cole's always going to give up one long ball.
He's gave up more than anybody in the American League this year.
He walked one guy and K'd eight. It was a cumulative 2.03 ERA. I could not have been more wrong, and I'm terribly sorry to the Yankees fans. There you have it.
They're going to pull your
I doubted. Card, no, you can't, but I did doubt. And I don't think I'm alone. I mean, clearly, you look at the comments, I am not alone. But I do have a platform, and I think that this needs to be said. Okay, Brad, I got a quick question for you before we take a break. Should MLB be concerned about how the bye week is playing out for these teams?
I don't think they should. It's weird, right? I think what it's going to do is it might force them to kind of address it, because players have spoken out against the bye week. They don't love the idea because they're all creatures of habit, especially the pitchers, right?
Yeah.
So I think that it might be brought up again. I don't know if it'll be brought up again this post or this off season, or if maybe it'll be next year, or not until the collective bargaining agreement comes, like all that comes up again, right? But I think it's going to be brought up. I think it's going to be like the bye week is not rewarding anybody. We have data that says that, because if it continues like this, where especially three of the four teams that have bye weeks are eliminated, there's going to be an issue and it's going to have to come up again. What do you think about it? Do you think it's going to be a problem?
I think it already is a problem. I think you've got major teams with major winning records getting just demolished by teams. And that only I look for the single common denominator, right? Like, what's the single point of failure here? And time off is the only difference.
Yeah.
The only difference is time off. You have to address that. You have to call it what it is. You can trump up any other charges you want, to put it in those terms. But I think it's all malarkey. I think the biggest thing is that 100% it's time off. All right, baseball family, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get you prepped for the league championship series right now.
The None Other Sports Podcast is the home of sports talk for everyone. Every other week, you can catch David and Jason as they talk about all things sports, from current events to classic moments and everything in between. You can find the None Other Sports Podcast on anchor.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and more. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review.
Welcome back, baseball family. So before we get out of here, before we wrap up, we wanted to talk some championship series. Well, the ALCS is not set, and it's not going to be set till Tuesday. So we're going to hold off on that one for now. But we're going to go into the NLCS. Got the Phillies against the Padres. The Padres are going to have home field advantage in this series, which, as we know, doesn't really matter. So,
come on. You can't tell me after everything that has happened that it doesn't matter.
It's swaying me otherwise this postseason that maybe it's mattering a little bit this year. But overall, I don't feel like it matters as much in baseball.
Okay, Brad.
So anyway, it's not like basketball or the NFL. How's that?
The crowd
plays a significant role in the way things go.
It is not, if you compare them that way, no. But I don't think you can discount its effect.
Okay. All right. We'll have to agree on that. I think that's where we can settle. Okay. All right. Deal. Okay. Anyway. So I gotta tell you, Brig, the Phillies bullpen has been a revelation, because every time they were going late into games with the lead against the Braves, it was like, well, there comes the bullpen, right? Like we saw the game against the Mets where the Phillies were the ones who met at the bed, and it was because of the bullpen, and I won money off of that game, and it was fantastic.
Good for you.
But they've done their job. They're closing out the games, and it's amazing. Good for them. I'm happy for them, because I've been cheering like crazy for the Phillies because of our buddy Jason and Tori. Like, I couldn't be happier for the Phillies at this point that they've made it this far.
Yeah, me too.
Are you as shocked as I am about the bullpen situation right now?
Completely shocked. Yeah, totally. But what's interesting is I've also been cheering for the Padres this whole time too. So now I'm stuck in a quagmire of emotion. Brad, I live in a glass case of emotion right now, because I don't know what here. And this is my default crappy answer, is that I just want to see good baseball games.
I know that's where I'm at this point, because I want to see the Padres win, because I've kind of gotten to like the Padres living down in the Southwest because they're close. But I've also I would love to see the Phillies do well, because we have friends who are Phillies fans.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, and I like guys who play for the Phillies too.
I like that. See, and that's what it comes down to for me. So let's switch into team shopping a little bit. If you're in our situation and you're like, I don't know what to do, I always go down the roster. I love Real Muto. I enjoy Brother Harper. I really, you know what I mean? But I love Machado. I can't get enough of Juan Soto's his October performances. Joe Musgrove is so much fun to cheer for. Like, you just, but so is Zach Wheeler. So I don't know.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I'm going to be cheering for success across the entire series. And whoever wins, I will be happy for them. And whoever loses, I will lament with them. I don't know if lament's the right word, but I will mourn with them.
There you go.
It would be really cool, though. Like, I'm planning on going, because I just lived, for those of you who don't know, I just live a little ways from the Peoria Sports Complex, which is where the Padres and Mariners have their spring training. Yes. I am planning on going to the backfields this next spring, and because there are some guys, obviously, for the Padres I want to meet and see if they'll sign a ball for my son.
Yeah.
And it would be really cool to go see those guys, see the World Series champions.
100% that would be awesome. Agree. Yeah, you're right. It
would be super cool.
Jason wants us all to know that he rides with Philly Rob, which we all knew. So,
yeah.
Yep. Way to go, man.
But
all right, let's get into it.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Let's get into this. Like, is there like an X factor you see with this? Like, how does the pitching stack up for you? Like, for me, the starting pitching is almost like
matched. Right? Yeah, totally. Although, no. I'm going to say that I love two of Philly starters, but I love three Padres starters. So in a seven-game set, I think the starting rotations, I'm going to have to give it to San Diego.
Yeah, I think you're right. The problem, like, is your third guy Clevinger or Snell?
No, it's the guys they started this. It's Joe, Java Joe, Mike Clevinger, and Yu Darvish.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering if Mike Clevinger was on there, because I feel like Mike Clevinger can come out and be dominant, right? Pitch seven innings of no like shutout baseball with like five hits or whatever, right? But at the same time, he could come out and get shelled in three.
Totally.
And Blake Snell has been the same way this year.
Same thing, but I don't know. I just feel better about it, because if you look at the Phillies, they've got Nola and Wheeler that are incredible. And then what?
Right. Yeah.
And I hate that it's that way, but it's like, honestly, and then what? I don't know. Syndergaard?
Yeah. I mean, he pitched fine over four innings. He gave up one hit, one run. But the problem is that, like, you don't want your starter only going four, especially in the NLCS,
which is the same problem. Deeper. Clevinger could have that problem, but I feel like Syndergaard does have that problem.
Yeah, that's the difference. You're right. I do think that the Phillies or the Padres have the edge on that. Offensively, though, like, I mean, there's a reason that the Phillies are known as the Beefy Boys.
Yeah.
Because
I don't know.
Kyle Schwarber leading off.
Okay, let me tell you about Schwarber, though.
Sir, does that make sense?
None. And it gets even worse when you figure that Kyle Schwarber this postseason, four games against Atlanta, 13 at-bats, one hit.
One for 13, yeah.
Yeah. And I think he went, I think this is cumulatively like, there was like 30 or 31 at-bats without any hit at all. Didn't he go 30 at-bats without a hit?
I think he did. I don't remember off the top of my head, but he also struck out four times. He walked. He did walk three times. That is one of his things.
He's still getting on.
He puts together good at-bats. He scored two runs, but the fact that he's only getting one hit and he's not being like... That to me, like, I like a guy who can get on base of the walk, but it's not productive.
Right.
I need somebody who's productive. Give me a double.
Especially your leadoff guy. Get on base. Yeah. Give me a bloop single. I want a laser shot out to the middle to the gap somewhere. Something. You got to get on base. You got to start the ball rolling, set the tone. So I'm confused why Kyle Schwarber is leading off, and I'm confused why it's working, because it's working. Just don't
apparently
understand.
It's been working for a while. Yeah, it doesn't understand. Make sense. It's kind of like A-Rod addressed it the other day with Aaron Judge, that he called a gimmicky baseball, that you don't put your best hitter leading off. But there's also data that says you do, because that's the spot that gets the most plate appearances, right?
And I think trying to get him to the record, I mean, that makes tons of sense. But let's look at Aaron Judge really quick postseason. His postseason batting this year,
not good,
is so bad. 16 plate appearances. He has hit the ball twice. Yeah, and he's worked one walk.
How many times? So he has...
He's batting 125.
How many strikeouts?
Nine strikeouts.
Okay, so he's hit the ball. He's just not getting on base by hitting the
correct.
Ball.
Correct.
I was like, yeah, but he's like, recorded. Man, he's not even making contact. Wow.
No, 16 at-bats, 3 runs, 2 hits. One was a home run in the ALDS, obviously, and 9 strikeouts. He's batting 125 in the ALDS.
Yeah, and I think he would be better off in the 3 position. But with Schwarber, though, like, do you put him down in the 5th spot? Because you've got Gene Segura, you've got Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, Rhys Hoskins, and the list goes on. Like, where else do you put Schwarber? You want to get him at bats.
Yeah, I don't know.
Right? That's the hard thing about that lineup, is that they should be crushing everybody, but they're not.
Agreed. So then you switch it over, and we're going to go look at the San Diego lineup really quick, because the Padres lineup is also very exciting. Where is it? Come on now.
So I've got Josh Bell, Cronenworth, the revelation, the postseason revelation, Trent Grisham.
Yes.
I don't know. But Manny Machado has been the most dangerous out of all of them. Juan Soto quietly went 3-for-16 with 1 walk, 1 strikeout. He had a double, scored 3 runs. This is not the Juan Soto we were expecting to show up. I wonder if he's just getting warmed up.
Hmm.
For his sake, I hope that's the case.
It's possible. Because
I don't know if I'd feel bad for him or be embarrassed for him that he just like goes to San Diego and forgets how to play baseball.
Yeah. I don't know.
That would be crazy.
Either way, it's a rut row big time.
Yeah.
I've got, okay. So I just looked up the spread really quick. Tuesday, 8:00, Phillies against the Padres. The spread is a -205 on Philly's side and a +175 on San Diego side.
So the Phillies are the favorites.
The Phillies Let's are the favorites.
See if I can get a run line.
And it's over 1.5. I don't know how to talk gambling. 1.5 over. And it's the under. San Diego's under at 1.5. Brad, take it away with the betting.
So that actually makes sense. The run line's always a run and a half. So that means that
exactly.
The Padres are a run and a half favorite, which is always the case. But the over-under is set at 6.5. So
yeah,
I would expect there to be 7 runs scored in this game.
Yeah, I can see that. I can totally see that.
That's a 3-4 ball game.
Yeah.
With the offenses these teams have, just like even with the pitching they have, I would expect 7 runs to be scored in this game.
That makes sense.
So,
you know what's funny is collectively the Padres starting lineup is batting 251, 242, 298. That's Manny Machado. 263, 240, 261, 243.
Those are regular season averages?
Regular season averages, and then 251. Uh-huh. Now, I think those are, because this has been a pitching year, that those make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That everybody's is dropped down, 20 points or whatever. But it's just
For the postseason, or at least for the NLDS, Manny Machado hit 357.
Yeah.
And Jake Cronenworth hit 438.
Oh, what about Trent Grisham?
Trent Grisham's 308.
That's awesome, man.
Good for him.
Cronenworth hit 438. That's awesome.
That is awesome. Yeah, and he had that go ahead single that got him to second toward the end of the game the other day. He's been a big deal. Yeah. So give me your prediction for this series, Brig.
What I want or what I predict are two different things. as it is always. I am going to say, it hurts my heart. I want to see, gosh, dang it. I don't even know what I want, Brad. I don't even know what I want. I'm needless and wantless in this situation.
Well, the thing that's hard is that we can't be like, well, I've discounted this team, so I'm going to pick them now, because we rolled both of these teams off.
We did. So what I would love to see. Exactly. So what I would love to see is I want to see all seven games played. I want back and forth games. I don't necessarily need high scoring. I want one game that's super low scoring pitching duel. I want to see a no-no bid go through six. I don't care if it's broken up after that, but I want to see a no-no go through six. And I want to see either the San Diego Padres or the Phillies go to the World Series. So that's what I want.
I like it.
What do you want?
I have one thing very specific that I want, because I want all those things as well. I want it to be back and forth, seven games. I'd like to see one to nothing gritty pitching duel. Not one that goes 18 innings, because that took my whole day. Brig, stress eating, man.
I know.
It's over now. It's just Halloween candy. But anyways, no, one thing I do want to see, like a 13 inning, 12 to 10 game.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Slugfest. Like what we had in, what was it? 2019, 2018. No, it was 2017. It was the year that the Astros won. Yeah. Like that game was amazing. I want one of those again, where it's just like back and forth for 13 innings, and it's just like, oh shoot, there's the game winner right there. No, it's not. He just tied it up. They're gonna win right here. Oh, he got it. Oh, just crazy.
A home run derby and extras.
I want one of those, because it was so much fun.
It was.
I specifically remember that night. I had like a whole list of things I was gonna do. I didn't do any of them.
No, of course not.
Because we had our TV mounted on our wall up above our fireplace, and I was like this close to it the whole time, just like, oh my gosh, I want another one of those.
It's so beautiful.
Jason says, I want him to die. No, Jason, yeah, I don't want you to die. But if you do, I'll be right there with you, because it'll just be amazing. Because
a collective I was on the brink heart attack of
this weekend.
we'll all get inspected by our physicians as soon as the season's over, as we always do.
Yeah. Set up an appointment with your cardiologist on November 8th.
Baseball family, we are going to talk about the ALCS on Thursday. We're going to go live on Thursday, and we'll give you all of our prep and reactions to the ALDS on that day. That'll be at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on all of these same platforms, Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube. Please join us then for our second live of the week.
That's right. And that's going to be one of our last. We're only going live through the playoffs. So be sure to jump on there. And if you have any questions for us, jump in the comments. We had some great conversation tonight. I was very happy to see that. It's a lot of fun. I love when you guys chime in. Don't be afraid to jump in the comments on YouTube, Facebook. I don't know if Twitch lets you comment, but if you can, go ahead and jump in, because we always welcome it. If it's between episodes, hop in the mailbag on baseballtogether.com and send us an email with your questions, comments, concerns, and always your snide remarks as well. Brig, tell them about the shop.
Hey, baseball family, we have a store where you can buy cool stuff, and it's super fun. I'm wearing my Baseball Things t-shirt as a nod to our... We actually have a whole line of pop culture-inspired baseball apparel, so you can jump on there and get that. I've got a hat with the same design on it that is just fabulous. So jump on there, get yourself something nice, and if you want a discount on the shop as you prepare for Christmas presents, etc., then go ahead and tag that link. I just posted the link again to the survey. That'll guarantee you, complete the survey, guarantee you 20% off the shop. And then the discounts get even bigger when you jump on a phone call with Brad and I. So we're looking forward to that. We cannot wait to talk to you. And one thing we wanted to make sure you know is that we are pushing really hard on YouTube right now. We are loving YouTube. It's a ton of fun for us. It's been a really cool space. So go ahead and like us on there, subscribe, hit the bell, and make sure that you get in on all the content we drop. We post highlights from the shows. We post the full episodes. There's lots of ways to interact with us on the YouTube machine. And with that, baseball family, thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next week.